Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Two Sport Town, the NFL podcast here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'm Ben Fredrickson, sitting alongside Jim Thomas, the great JT, our NFL writer here at the paper. And man, JT, we got a lot to talk about. We will dive into the Rams' latest embarrassments. There's a lot, and it's only we're recording this on a Wednesday.
The Rams were embarrassed.
It's been a rough week. And it's been a rough week. It's been a rough week Sunday through Tuesday. I can only imagine where it's going to go from here. We'll dive into the latest drama with the Los Angeles Rams on today's episode. We're also going to, as we always do, make JT's six picks for the weekend, and we'll catch up with another great guest.
I'm unbeaten this year, aren't I? I haven't missed one.
I haven't been keeping track, but I'm not sure that people who are betting on your picks, not that we would ever encourage that, I'm not sure they're too happy, but maybe you can get back on
track. I've kind of been keeping
week.
I think I'm unbeaten. Maybe I missed one game.
Well, this is what happens when I don't hold you accountable and fact check you. We're also going to have another great guest. How about Dick Vermeil last week, Mike March this week, the architect of the greatest show on turf. He will join us, and we'll catch up with him about what he's up to these days. Could he potentially get back into coaching? We'll try to make the case for him to maybe be the head coach of the Rams.
Yeah, if Jeff Fisher, I wonder what he thinks of Jared Goff.
Doesn't get that extension. We'll catch up with Mike Mart later in the podcast. But let's start with the Rams, JT, as we always do here on Two Sport Town. I've been pretty open about hate watching the Rams this season. I've decided I'm going to give it this season, and then I'll try to let it go after it. But I got to tell you, JT, this last week was pretty sweet for me. 49-21 loss at New Orleans. Greg Williams dominated by his former team, Sean Payton, not letting his foot off the gas, being as animated as you're going to see him in a game, as the Saints just wiped the floor with the Rams. Drew Brees, four touchdown passes. Mark Ingram, I think, had one touchdown all season, comes in and puts two on the Rams. And also you have wide receivers throwing trick passes to running backs for another score. I mean, this was a total domination. It included such highlights as Jeff Fisher, who is now – how close is he to the all-time losing record?
Two from tying.
He's two losses away from tying the all-time loss record in the NFL. It included him getting in a fight with an argument. With with Greg Williams on the sideline. Greg Robinson couldn't see that argument because he wasn't dressed. He wasn't active for the game. He was taking a mental break. And if that couldn't get worse, then it spills over to more drama, which is Eric Dickerson going on a full-out rampage against Jeff Fisher. Let's start with the game, and then we'll get to the Rams. I like to call it their ED issue. What did you make of this loss to the Saints?
And don't forget about didn't Snoop Dogg do a video?
Oh my God, I forgot about Snoop.
Where he ripped Fisher?
Yes,
called him a bum.
He did. He called him a couple things that we shouldn't say on this proud podcast.
That's
affiliated with the newspaper.
Yeah.
Correct, but he did say a couple words that shouldn't be said. But he also said he should be fired. Also, I don't know if you saw Stephen A. Smith's epic ESPN rant against Jeff Fisher as well, but I'm kind of getting the vibe that when you come at Eric Dickerson, and we can debate whether or not this is legit with Eric Dickerson or not, because I don't want to defend Jeff Fisher, but I don't know that this is all on Jeff Fisher. We'll discuss this, but it seems that when you come at Eric Dickerson, a lot of people get upset.
Yeah, and well, also now, on top of all this, there was an NFL.com article where Kevin Dehoff basically defended Jeff Fisher, all the stuff he had to go through to go through this move, the extenuating circumstances, what a leader it is. I had no idea, Ben Fredrickson. Apparently the Rams took the Lewis and Clark Trail to get to the West Coast in covered wagons. I had no idea it was such an ordeal to get out to the Pacific time zone.
I mean, I did this kind of a little bit sarcastically. I'll admit, yesterday I did a...
Stop.
I did a power ranking of the Rams' most embarrassing moments this week. And the joke was that you can already have a top five, and it's Tuesday.
Right.
And that was before Snoop Dogg even released the video.
Or before the Demoff.
And Demoff made these comments.
See, I think you need to do a virtual reality power ranking where it's updated constantly. It's a 24-hour newsroom.
I don't think our
speak.
Readers would get a kick out of that at all. But no, I mean, this is nuts. And I got to read you some of these quotes from Demoff in this NFL.com article. And the best part about this article, and this is the most Rams thing ever, it was published yesterday, and it had included this line of all these celebrities who have been going to Rams games, right? Like, as like a, basically like, look, this is happening. It hasn't been the start the Rams wanted, but celebrities are turning out. You know, that's caught the city's attention. One of the celebrities mentioned in this article is Snoop Dogg.
I saw him on the station a couple sideline shots of the Miami game
like,
of him. Yeah,
a couple hours.
He didn't look like he was paying attention to the game. Anyway,
couple hours after the article comes out, here's a video of Snoop Dogg calling for Fish to be fired. I'm guessing Snoop Dogg won't be getting more sideline passes.
No, he and Eric Dickerson will be banished, apparently.
This is Kevin Demoff in the article for people who haven't heard it. There are some real gems. Talking about if Jeff Fisher will be extended after this season. He doesn't say yes, but he just goes on to give a kind of a bleeding heart testament to Fisher on how good he is. Demoff, who we know is a pillar of truth and ethics, says, "Everybody will want to judge Jeff Fisher through the prism of just the record. But that's totally unfair when you look at the set of circumstances he was handed this year. It was different than any team in the NFL." Okay. Goes on to say, "We moved halfway across the country, then had OTAs in Ochsner. Training camp was in Irvine. Now we're in Thousand Oaks. We moved coaches and players and families to provide leadership and consistency. He's done a model job. But wait. There's more. He's a terrific leader of men, players, coaches, and staff. He has their complete respect in the way he runs the franchise. It's easy to talk about the record, aka the only thing that matters. But you have to take a snapshot of everything this year and give him credit that he's due. And then there's more, JT. The past, says Demoff, the past 2 years, he's had to deal with the specter of relocation. This year, the actual relocation. A couple of coaches have to deal with the specter of relocation. No coach has had to deal with an actual relocation. You have to understand what this team has been through and the success that he's had." So the entire thing the Fisher spent the last 2 years telling us didn't matter at all is now being used as a defense to help him keep his job.
Ben, I want you to kind of try to be a more understanding person, more compassionate person. I heard, and these are multiple sources, they had a lot of trouble with the covered wagons. They ran low on water when they
dysentery,
crossed.
Dysentery, is that what it's called?
When they crossed the desert. Will you give these people a break? Come on.
It's not like they had movers and millions of dollars spent on the relocation or anything like that. I do see the Rams are struggling. I mean, I see the shots of the players' homes out there in L.A. They got pool parties with, you know, beautiful women in bikinis. I mean,
They're really struggling. Working out on the beaches. Todd Gurley's been making hamburger commercials, which Jeff
Gordon
loves.
He's just got to get by. You know, he's trying to
scrape by out there with all the hardship. You've heard of reality series. There's a million of them. Rams football is an unreality series. Have you ever seen an organization with less of a sense of urgency of winning? I used this as an example the other day. St. Louis FC soccer. I'm a big fan. It's a third-tier soccer. They fired their coach in mid-season because they didn't like what was going on. St. Louis FC soccer. Yet the Rams, 5 straight losing seasons. You've done the research, my friend. What is it? 2 coaches in the entire
He'll be the second.
Super Bowl? He'll be the second. Is the other one of the Shulas at Cincinnati, is it?
I think he'll be the second coach since
Have
the merger.
Have had 5 straight losing seasons.
In his first 5 seasons with the team,
right.
and still get this job. It's incredible.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
He's the Teflon
no
trophy.
But back to your original question about that game, 49-21. And I got some blowback from LA Rams fans because I in the Rams rewind that I do, usually it's every Tuesday kind of rehashing the game, not in a sarcastic sense like you, but just with the eye of a beat writer, that it was the 14-10 loss. Don't blame Goff. Don't blame the offense. How do you if you're supposed to have this elite defense? You totally shut them down for 3.5 quarters. How do you give up 2 touchdowns in like the last 5 minutes to just a pedestrian offense like the Dolphins? And my point being, this defense is always teased. They've shown flashes of being a top 10 defense, and then it never quite works out under Fisher. And I also point out, we'll find out what the defense is really made of these next 3 weeks because they're playing New Orleans, New England, and Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
3 top 6 teams in total offense, 3 top 4 quarterbacks, Breeze, Brady, Ryan, in terms of passer rating. Well, they show up in New Orleans, 49 points, 555 yards. The 49 points, the second most ever allowed by a Rams team in what would be in St. Louis. Of course, they're not in St. Louis anymore, but that was the day Kurt Warner had his first pinky fingers, first hand injury in Kansas City in 2000. They lost 54-34. But in terms of 555 yards, you have to go back. You have to go back to L.A.
The most
1990,
points.
1990, 555 yards, 1990. It was just terrible. Greg Williams, I mean, and I've never seen Sean Payton look so animated and fired up on the sideline. He really wanted to stick it to Greg.
Let's touch on that for a second, because I think a lot of people maybe who are not familiar with the Rams' history who covering this game from L.A. missed the storyline there. Obviously the storyline Sean Payton wanted to demoralize Greg Williams' defense.
And Greg Williams' first game back in New Orleans since the whole bounty gate thing, and people say, well, why would he be so upset? Well, Sean Payton lost a year of his career with a suspension. The Saints program really hasn't been the same since then, and then the counter might be, well, surely he had to know what Greg Williams was doing. Sean Payton is one of these offensive guru types. He has no idea what's going on defense. Mike Martz probably didn't know the names of half the defenders he had on his team. So, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, that trick play that you mentioned, that 50-yard pass, that it was already 42-21 when he pulled the trick pass on him. So,
tells me everything I need to know about the way he feels toward Greg Williams.
Yes, exactly. So, here you are at 4-7 now, lost 6 of 7 games. New England at New England this week. Oof. And then Atlanta coming to St. Louis. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Ben Fred, and say I think it's going to be the 13th consecutive non-winning season for the Rams, which now that the Raiders are 9-2 this year, it's the longest string of non-winning seasons in the entirety of the NFL.
Wow, that's impressively bad.
Even Cleveland, longer. Buffalo, longer. Jacksonville, longer. This will be the longest.
Jeff Fisher told us he wasn't going to go 7-9, looking like he's going to wind up going worse. It's really not that surprising. I mean, we knew they weren't going to turn into a different team in L.A. I do think it's fascinating how being in L.A. I mean, this was kind of predictable, right? The Rams are a thin-skinned organization from top to bottom. We've oftentimes, when we've covered the Rams, have heard from them about things they didn't like or things they wanted to push back on or been called into the coach's office.
You got barked at because you noticed a sword in the meeting, a samurai sword.
You get called in to get chewed out for something that you shouldn't have written or shouldn't have said. And, you know, it was a constant battle saying, look, well, this is something we clearly see with our eyes. This is just fact. You can't get mad about facts. But this is a thin-skinned organization. It starts with Stan Kroenke. So clearly when the thin-skinned organization moves to Los Angeles, more cameras – more exposure, more of a national interest, because you're the LA darlings, and when things don't go well, there are going to be people who take shots. Well, one of the person taking a lot of shots is Hall of Famer, really the one of the greatest Los Angeles Rams, probably the greatest Los Angeles Ram. It's up for debate. Eric Dickerson, Hall of Fame running back who has a radio show.
I would go with Deacon Jones, but
sure.
In terms of offense, I would say yeah.
Offensive, yeah, that's a better way of phrasing it. But anyway, huge presence. In L.A., kind of one of the faces of the last
and does,
L.A.
does
Rams.
Sports talk radio out there.
He has his own radio show, and he's been ripping the Rams. And, I mean, you understand why. He's an offensive guy. He sees Todd Gurley getting mangled behind an offense that has no threat before they switch to Jared Goff. And he sees a lack of creativity. He sees an inability to stretch the field and make room for Gurley. And he's saying these things. And now he says it in the way that Eric Dickerson says. He's a pretty blunt, brash guy, I think, when he's on the radio. So obviously this probably bothers the Rams more than somebody like me or you speaking poorly about them, because this is one of their former players. This is a guy that means a lot to their fans
and that
the franchise.
And that they've invited to even a few times in St. Louis to like alumni events and alumni weekends, stuff like that, you know, organizational sanctioned activities.
So we've got different stories going on here. Eric Dickerson has made it sound like he was contacted by Jeff Fisher basically in order to tell him to stop complaining about the team. If he wants to show up at games, then as long as he's the coach, he won't be welcome on the sideline anymore because he makes the players uncomfortable. And Dickerson,
the
has
players,
since,
not the coaches,
Dickerson has since
the
went
players.
Off the deep end. You know, just basically going on a war path against Fisher, saying, "Look, I'm not going to go to games as long as Fisher's the head coach." Well, Fisher seems to be telling people, aka Mike Silver, that Dickerson wants to show up at games. He wants sideline passes. He wants all these special things, you know, given to him and to whoever he brings with him to games. And he's also, while asking for these handouts, is ripping the team. And it was communicated to him, look, like, you know, let's not put you on the sideline. Let's put you up in a booth. Like, you know, and also, hey, man, if we're going to give you this stuff, maybe you should come out to practice and maybe get a better feel for what you're talking about. Maybe you won't rip us as much. Let's have this relationship, you know, be a little bit better if we're going to be giving you things, which that I can kind of understand. So, but I also think that the players, Todd Gurley, I would imagine, agrees with a lot of what Dickerson has been saying. So, and then probably most of the defense as well, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, where do you sit on this? Because to me, it seems like Dickerson probably is not being as genuine as he should be, but also we know that Jeff Fisher and Kevin Demoff, who is scurrying around trying to put out this fire, they're not necessarily the beacons of honesty either. So whose side are you on in this?
Well, the knee-jerk reaction nationally has been Eric Dickerson, great, Jeff Fisher, what a, you know, and it is open season piling on Jeff Fisher. Here's how I feel. One, Jeff Fisher's been doing this for a while. He's had a lot of practice at losing games. Am I wrong on that? No. He's about to lose more than anybody in the history of the game. He should be a little thicker skin about criticism. I mean, come on. But the other thing is, what Dickerson did, ripping the head coach, then he calls him up and he wanted, like, tickets or passes to the game for his friend.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. No, you got, and that's, I think that's what Fisher pointed out. Now, let me get this right, Eric. You're ripping me on the radio incessantly, and then you want more tickets for the game, or you want to get some of your buddies on the sideline or a suite. That's not really how it works. So I see fault on both sides. One, Fisher should have a thicker skin, and two, come on, Eric.
Also,
really?
Also, come on, Kevin. I mean, this thing blows up, right? You got
no one. No, oh, excuse me. No one. I got so excited, I blew up our mic there. No one can calm the storms of a tempestuous situation like Kevin Demoff, right?
I mean, right? So you got a hothead coach in Fisher, a thin-skinned hothead coach. You got a hothead in Eric Dickerson, and they've gotten into this public spat. Not good for the team. I think we could all agree. Whoever started it, whoever was wrong, this is bad for the Rams, right?
Not a good look, no.
And instead of, like, calling together, hey, let's get a lunch. Let's everybody step away from the Twitter machine. Let's calm this down. Like, hey, we're all in this together, right? No,
apparently
Demoff
not.
Just goes to Twitter and starts basically just like communist propaganda. Like, nothing to see here. We love Eric Dickerson. It's like, dude, come on. Like, you have to settle this out off of Twitter. Like, two tweets are not going to make one of your best players of all time come down off the ledge here. You gotta call him.
Probably.
You gotta get him over to the practice facility, and you gotta iron this out. You send out two tweets, which I think you mentioned, JT, the responses to Kevin Demoff's tweet about Dickerson. I don't think we can read them on air here.
No, because he's
asking to get roasted, and that's what happened. And it didn't make the situation any better.
No. So what you're telling me, if I understand you correctly, Ben Fred, is your preferred method of crisis management probably isn't Twitter? Am I understanding you right?
I just think you got to do a little bit more in that situation. You just got to do a little bit more. St. Louis fans are really showing out in Demoff's mentions here. It's you know, some things along the lines of, as St. Louis fans know, you are a man of integrity and of your word. And it just goes on and on and on. And
fairly
it just
entertaining,
made things worse.
Pretty more than fairly. It's just very entertaining.
And this, I mean, we don't even have time to get into the Snoop Dogg video. Not that we could play it on the podcast because it's littered with F-bombs. But my goodness, you have another guy who you brought out to your sideline and paraded around as a celebrity, and now he's calling for your coach to be fired. It's like, is Britney Spears next? I mean, Fisher has bragged about Britney Spears being on the sideline. Apparently, is she gonna start ripping him and
Could
saying
be.
He needs to be fired?
I hear she's working on a song about Jeff Fisher. Yeah.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
Not complimentary.
Oh my goodness. What a week for the Rams. And again, as we said, we're recording this on a Wednesday. So by the time you hear it, there'll probably be something else that has happened. It's almost hard to break away, but we should, JT. We should. We got to focus a little bit on the NFL because there are some playoff spots up for grabs this week that could be clinched, and some exciting divisional races.
Yeah, no doubt. And I always say, and a lot of people always say, that really the playoff races begin right around Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving has come and gone, and there can be some playoff berths clinched over the weekend. I think Dallas is in with a win, and I got to say, some fascinating races. And for the last couple of weeks, we really don't hear about the TV ratings. There's been some fascinating games. That Sunday night game, Kansas City and Denver, was unbelievable. I love the watching the Oakland Carolina game. The two divisions that are fascinating to me are the NFC East, where it looks like Philadelphia is pretty much out of the mix now after that Monday night loss to Green Bay. But you could have three teams from the NFC East, which is clearly the strongest division, make the playoffs, and then the AFC West. Although, as we sit here right now, Denver's out, and Mike Martz's protege, Adam Gase, is got Miami going. We could see three teams from the AFC West there. So it's going to be fun. Even the divisions, to me, where they're a bunch of 6-6, 6-5 teams, those are fascinating because, as we've seen in recent years in the NFL, there have been some 9-7 wild cards that have done some damage in the playoffs, most notably the Giants toppled New England in the Super Bowl off of one of their 9-7 seasons. So that's going to be fun. I can't wait to pick some games because I want to add to my strong record here.
Okay, so look, if you really want to hold JT accountable on his picks, you can go back and listen to the previous podcast. So maybe someone, listener is willing to go back and make a chart per se, you will stop bragging. You can find all of our previous podcasts or previous episodes on any of your favorite podcast apps. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Play Music, or you can just find the entire collection of Two Sport Town episodes on the Post Dispatch website. It's just stltoday.com/NFL podcast. You can find the entire archive of Two Sport Town episodes there as well.
Aeneas Williams on there. The Dick Vermeil, it's kind of a holiday special with Dick Vermeil, right?
It kind of carried over to the discussion with Mike Martz. So we'll stay in the holiday spirit. But first, we have to do JT's pick six. We have you make six picks every week. These are just for fun, not for gambling unless you want to. But just don't tell us about it. And we do it here on the show every week. We'll start off with how about the Thursday night game, JT? Dallas at Minnesota. You said one more win gets them in. Do they get it against Sam Bradford and the boys?
Yeah, I think they do. The Vikings will be tough at home. The defense is tough, but the Vikings, just not enough juice on offense.
All right, Kansas City at Atlanta. Chiefs at Falcons, coming off that incredible bounced in field goal. The Chiefs keep the momentum rolling.
Cairo Santos, the Brazilian born.
He knew
kicker.
He had it all the time. He had it the whole way. Never a doubt.
Yeah. You know what? The Chiefs' motto, I think, should be find a way. And they're going to find a way to beat Atlanta.
Good stuff. All right. The Rams at New England. This will be a bloodbath. I mean, this is going to be awful.
I think Tom Brady's going to be okay in this one, even though his knee's a little gimpy. Gronk's back is bad. Yeah, I think the wheels are falling off in L.A.
All right, we got Carolina Panthers at Seattle, two marquee quarterbacks going at it at CenturyLink Field.
Carolina's still a tough out. Seattle kind of got beat up, and they're a beat up team in Tampa.
Are they on the ropes a little bit?
A little bit, especially at running back. They've kept bringing guys in, but now Precise is hurt. Thomas Rawls can't stay healthy. But up there, the land of the 12s, the land of the over-caffeinated, where you can get a Starbucks on, what, about every corner?
And in the press box, right?
Yeah, they're gonna hold serve. I'll go with the Hawks in that one.
Okay, what about Monday night matchup, Colts at the New York Jets?
The Colts are surprisingly still in the mix.
Hanging around.
At the Jets. My man, Ryan Fitzpatrick there, somehow holding on his job. Nobody loves him. Can't get a hug from Woody Johnson.
Fitz happens, baby.
Yeah. Can't get a hug from Woody Johnson or anyone. I'm going to say that Andrew Luck, coming back, he missed that Thanksgiving Day game with a concussion. I'm going to go Colts.
Now, this will be your boldest pick of probably the entire season, but you have a sleeper pick for the woeful Cleveland Browns.
If you were going to maybe make an investment, this would be the one. I'm going to say this very quietly. Cleveland will not lose this week. Cleveland will not lose. I see on their schedule this week, they play a team called BYE. I've never even heard of them. I've heard of BYU. I haven't heard of BYE. Cleveland will not lose this week.
Man, the Browns actually worse than the Rams?
I think so.
Wow, that's saying something.
And San Francisco might be, although you'd never know it by, what, opening night? What was it, 28-0 Niners?
Another week, another great guest on the Two Sport Town podcast, the NFL podcast here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. JT, the hits keep coming this week. How about the architect of the greatest show on turf, former St. Louis Rams coach and offensive coordinator Mike March joins us on the podcast. Talk a little offense, talk a little Rams, talk a little – maybe we can convince him to get back into the game, JT. We'll try. Coach March, how's it going? Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Good morning. Things are going real good. Appreciate you having me on.
Mike, I understand you're complaining about the weather there in San Diego. What is it like? What is it like, 60 degrees or what? Are you got the snuggies out or what?
It's not a cloud in the sky. It's 52 degrees. It's very chilly this morning. Just got out of the jacuzzi, kind of warmed me up a little bit. So things are going good.
Life is rough for Mike March. Mike, how was Thanksgiving? How's the holiday season going?
Great. No, we had a couple of kids were able to make it. We've got two back in St. Louis still. So, but we had a great Thanksgiving. Julie made a big turkey and a ham and all the typical trimmings. It was great.
And you didn't go back for seconds, though, did you?
Oh, I always do. That's my favorite time of year. That's my favorite holiday. I can kill a turkey. I can tell you, I can turkey gravy and mashed potatoes and pepper and salt on that. I could stick my face in that pretty good.
And like I know Emily, she is she lives in St. Louis, right? Didn't she just get married out
she
here?
She does. Yeah, she's gonna get married next summer. She's back there, and they're making plans to get married here in June. And David, our other son, is back there as well. He works at UPS.
And Mike, you split your time. You spend some time up in you got a place up in Idaho, right? Up in the skiing country, is that right?
We do. It's kind of a hidden valley up there. It's City McCall, which sits on a lake back there called Payette Lake, and we're kind of back on the mountain back there. That we found this by accident, actually, and when I was coaching Chicago, and we built a home on it, and we get up there probably 5 or 4 months out of the year anyway.
Okay. Well, the Two Sport Town podcast, we're going to go up there then. We'll visit you in the summer and do a live show out there. Is that all right? Are we invited or what?
I would love to have you up there anytime. Door's always open.
I'll come as long as there's turkey.
We can arrange that.
Now, Mike, what are you up to these days? You do some work with the Chargers, right? Is broadcast or radio? Is that correct?
Well, I do sort of. Kind of, I guess. Every Thursday morning, I do a half-hour show with Dan Cilio in the morning on the Mighty 1090 down here, and they talk about the past game and the upcoming game. So it's kind of fun to do, but just kind of bounce around and starting to play golf again now that my body's back together.
So, yeah, you've had what?
It's all good.
Knee replacement, but you're also affiliated, and I always try to watch it just to kind of watch the sideline shots for Mike March. You're affiliated with one of the college all-star games. So what is it? The NFL PA Collegiate Bowl, and you're one of the coaches, right?
Yes. In fact, I've done that for the last 2 years. Dick Vermeil did it for 3, and then he handed it off to me. And it's really, I wasn't real sure how good this was going to be. I was a little tentative my first year. Once I got there and got involved, it's really awesome. It's all those mid-range draft to late round or free agent kind of guys that are not going to get a chance to go to the Senior Bowl. And they get an opportunity to come out there and practice and play under NFL scrutiny. It's really quite a game. It's really a lot of fun to do.
It looks like you have fun doing it. And Mike, let me get right to it then. You're coaching that game. I do a readers chat, NFL chat still on Tuesdays, and I get still a lot of Rams fans both in St. Louis and LA, and I bet I got 3, 4, 5 questions. What about Mike March as the next head coach of the now LA Rams? Mike, do you have any interest at all in getting back in the game?
It just kind of would depend, I think, Jim. I think a situation like that would be awesome. That's just not going to happen. I think that at this point in my life, I don't want to move clear across the country again and go through some of those hoops that I did after I got released there at the Rams. I'm pretty happy with my life right now, but an opportunity comes along where you get a chance to do it again, absolutely be kind of thrilling to do, but I think that ship kind of sailed at my age, and after being out of the league for as long as I've been, you just kind of, you're out of the loop, so to speak.
Coach, let me ask you about this. Have you ever considered or been approached for any type of college job?
You know, for the first 2 or 3 years, I was out, actually 2 or 3 would kind of come along a year, and I just didn't have an interest in it, and really still don't. I just am so tied into the NFL, it's probably, and I don't mean that in an arrogant sense, it's just you're so wired into how the game's played at that level, and I'm not sure about the recruiting and grade checks and all those things that those guys have got to go through. I just think the NFL would be, if I was going to coach again, that's where I'd be.
So my dreams of Mike Martz leading the Idaho greatest show on turf and the Kibbe Dome, I got to put those to bed.
Although I got to tell you, I do like the Kibbe Dome.
It's a great
that's
place.
A pretty awesome place up there. It is. I've been there many times working guys. In fact, that's how I found the property in Idaho.
No kidding.
I went to work a quarterback up there, and we came back, and I came down through the valley there, and I said, what is this place? And we came back that summer, did some fishing, and found a place there, and that was it.
Now, this is a guy, Mike Martz, here on the Two Sport Town podcast, who got not one, but two 4,000-yard seasons out of John Kitna. John freaking Kitna, you know, bless his heart. Could you imagine Mike working with a young quarterback like Jared Goff? And plus, Mike's press conferences are always the most interesting. You never quite know what Mike Martz is going to say. I think you'd be great. Somebody on the chat yesterday, Mike said you sound like Mike Martz's agent. I said, well, I like Mike. I like Mike a lot. I'm not gonna deny it. You did work with Jared Goff for one day, right? Could you kind of take us through that, Mike? During the pre-draft process?
I'll do that in a second, but I got to tell you first, you used to egg me on, and I knew it all the time.
Well,
you
yeah.
You used to prod and egg me on the yabbit, yabbit, yabbit.
You remember that, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I did work with Jared Goff, and I really felt like both of these guys were going to be championship kind of quality quarterbacks, that they could take a team to a Super Bowl. They're that talented, both of Wentz and Goff. And I really felt like watching them on tape, Wentz had the better workout probably, really impressive physically. And Jared had a good workout. It's not that he didn't have a good workout, but when I looked at him play the game, Jared made some throws that most guys just can't make. Under duress, just putting it on a dime, and I just really liked the way he played, getting hit, knocked around, got up, you know, just the competitive part of it. There's so many good things about him that I liked. I think that he's going to have a heck of a career in the league. I really do.
Yeah, you liked his release, right? Didn't you say Goff? Very quick release?
Yeah, very quick. That ball comes out of there like a shot, and he's really easy to work with. It's kind of like Kurt was. You can tell him one time, and he can instantly do it, and that's really unusual. Usually guys will have to, you know, take a couple reps at it or so. You could say something to Kurt, and he can instantly do it, which is really, really unusual.
And with Goff and the Rams, it's got to come out quick because of that offensive line, right? No, I'm teasing. Well, maybe a little, anyway.
Well, you know, it's just like anything else. People always ask me, where would you start if you're going to build a football team? And it all starts in the offensive line, regardless of what anybody says. You know, you have a great offensive line. You can do whatever you want in offense. You run it when you have to, throw it when you need to. And it keeps the defense off the field. It's kind of the heart and soul of any football team, and it's pretty hard to win a championship without a great offensive line or a very good offensive line.
Have you gotten a chance to watch Jared much since he's starting for the Rams this season?
I didn't. I haven't seen him play. I saw a couple clips of him. I saw on the news I was over in Hawaii, so I missed his deals. I came back and saw some clips on it, and I thought he did very well. He's very quick with the ball. He made typical Jared Goff. He was getting pressured. He stepped to the side on one leg and threw a shot down the sideline and hit the mark, you know. So those are the things I saw on tape that I think gives him a chance of being pretty special. He just needs to play now.
And I'm sure you've seen a little bit of Wentz. Also curious, Mike, a couple of the other young quarterbacks now in their second year, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, how do you think those guys are progressing?
I don't know as much about Jameis. I think he's watching him. He's really quick in his decisions, which surprised me. I didn't realize he was that good. You know, I didn't know much about him when I saw him this year. He's really done a good job with Jameis down there, developing. I mean, he's bringing them along the right way at this point. And I think that Marcus Mariota has always been a guy that I've had great high regard for physically. You know, you've sat down and drew up a prototypical quarterback. That's who it's going to be. You know, big, tall guy, great arm, has touch, can run like the wind. You know, that whole thing. And personality plus, he's very, you know, self-deprecating and just a kind individual that people are going to be drawn to. Excellent leadership quality. He's a smart guy. He's a can't miss. So I think both those young quarterbacks are going to have long careers in this league.
Yeah, I love watching Mariota play. He's so much fun to watch. Now, Mike, it's become a passing league, but we see a lot of these dinks and dunks. Not many teams do it like you did it. You like those deep in patterns. You like to throw deep. Well, what do you see around the league in terms of the passing game these days?
Well, we had those kinds of guys. I think the coverages have changed a little bit. There's a lot more man-to-man. The whole premise is, and I think some of the league has gotten away from this, is you've got to have a receiver that can beat a corner one-on-one most of the time. And we always had that. So that if they're going to go press man or whatever, you know that guy's going to win on that route. You just got to protect the quarterback. And it's kind of an iffy proposition anymore. It's a 50-50 deal that you'd never be. If you're going to be a good passing team, you know, just the skill and the technical part of getting off of guys and creating cushions for the quarterback, the dynamics of route running have gotten a little bit sloppy, and I think that's where things get hung up. In terms of throwing the ball deep over the middle, the worst pass defenders in the league are those linebackers. That's not what they do.
Yeah.
And so that's why we always did. You know, they're easy to fool. Those guys backing up on the outside, they're pretty good at it. So we always attack where they're not very good, and it ended up being okay.
Yeah, you know, I was in Colts camp and talked to, you remember Ryan Grigson, he was a young scout when you were running the show, but he said he learned from watching your receivers that he didn't necessarily want this big physical guy. He said the thing about the Mike March receivers, and he says they try to get him there at Indy, and I think T.Y. Hilton would fit right in with what you like to do. He liked the sudden receivers. He said Mike March, the ones who could get off the line of scrimmage and create separation. And it seems like more teams are looking for the big guys now instead of the kind of guys that you like. Because your receivers, Hakeem, Bruce Holt, they weren't necessarily the biggest guys at all.
No, they're not very big at all. They were, you know, the 5'11", 185-pound guys. And I think the biggest issue there is either you feel like you can help a guy or teach a guy that's got that kind of ability to separate. So I don't care who lines up on him. They're in a corner of the league that Isaac and Torrey lined up and didn't have success on. You know, they just were experts at the technical aspect of running routes and getting separation. They had that quickness and that ability. I think they've gone to big receivers now because there's so much grab and jostling outside. They just muscle their way to the ball. And I, you know, it's like I was on the competition committee. We're going round and round with this Pereira. Mike Pereira was, of course, in charge then. And, you know, he kept talking about the contact and his judgmental down the field. It's very clear in the rule. You can't have it. So I told him, I said, you know, what you're going to do is we're going to end up having tight ends playing wide receiver here pretty quick. And he laughed. I said, no, I'm serious. That's what's going to happen if you don't start to enforce the rule that's all. You know, after 5 yards, you cannot contact him. You can't disrupt the route. So there's that thought now that I think a lot of guys have gone to. You get the big receiver there and throw the ball up and just let him muscle his way to the ball. And, you know, of course, I don't abide by that. I want the guys that can run like crazy and separate. And after they catch the ball, they can turn it on and go with it.
This conversation is making me wonder about Tavon Austin, who is, you know, such a talented player, but he has to be used in certain ways because of his size. How does a guy like that thrive in an offense? And I'm not asking to tee off on the Rams, but they seem to have struggled to find ways to get him the production that his contract says he should have. How do you use a guy like that and make him successful?
Well, he would be the Ozakim for me. We put him in the slot, and move him around, and whoever their third DB is going to be is going to be taken to task. You know, that matchup is going to, we're going to win that matchup every time. The problem with that is if you make him the slot receiver or the nickel receiver, who are the guys that on the outside? And if you don't have those guys, then you can't afford to do that with them. And that may be where they are. I don't know. I do know Jeff knows what he's doing. He's a real good coach, and you know, there's nothing that he's trying to do that is wrong or any of that stuff. He's just probably limited in some respects. So, but Tavon Austin, I think, needs to be matched up inside. That's where you can make a lot of money with him.
Coach, the once again, we have the Hall of Fame vote coming up. Do you think this is the year Kurt Warner gets in?
Well, I would think so. I'm kind of disappointed he didn't get in the first time, but I don't think there's any question he's going now. You know, two-time MVP and, you know, three Super Bowl appearances and, you know, all that stuff. So two different teams. I there's no question he deserves to get in. And, you got to – think that both Isaac and Torrey got to get in here pretty quick as well.
Yeah, I think it would be a shame this year if either one or two of your wide receivers didn't at least make the finals. They've got to take the next step.
I would think so. You know, they just didn't bring a lot of attention to themselves, and they were on a real good team. It was a very unselfish team. Their numbers speak for themselves. They compare both their numbers. Torrey, nobody in the history of football in their first 10 years has the production that he has in the first 10 years. Nobody. Not Jerry Rice, nobody. You know, six straight years of 1,300 yards? That'll never be broken. And then Isaac, you know, just, my goodness, the yards and the receptions over his career.
And some of the big plays he made for you too, you know, just
The Super Bowl winning catch, you know, all that combined. To me, those two guys are shoo-in, but I don't know. You know, I don't know what they look for. I guess if I understood,
perhaps Torrey or Isaac should have proposed to the kicking net like Odell Beckham Jr. You know, to get more attention.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right.
I dream of the world where receivers don't draw too much attention to themselves anymore. That was a different time.
Well, that's just who they were, though. That's who they are. They're very unselfish people that love the game and more concerned about winning than anything else. And I think that, you know, they're a good role model for guys playing the game today. I really do. And I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, great point. Hey, Coach Marsh, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on to talk some football with us. We got to ask for one guarantee. If you do ever make that call and are going to debut as the head coach of the Vandals out there in Idaho, we want to break the story here at the Post-Dispatch.
All right, we'll absolutely do that.
All right, we'll catch up with you down the line. Another great guest here on the Two Sport Town podcast, JT. You
keep on the only Mike March. Mike, thanks for taking the time, man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This will do it for this latest edition of the Two Sport Town podcast. Just a reminder that you can find all of the podcasts at your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Google Play Music, all that good stuff. Also at the Post-Dispatch website, stltoday.com/NFL podcast will take you directly to the landing page, and we will be back with a new episode next week.